Well, I am so excited to be here with one of the powerhouse leaders in San Joaquin County, and more specifically in the city of Stockton. Destiny Rivas has been one of the first leaders that I met when I came back home to Stockton to work at the University of the Pacific, who has been one of the most influential people that I have felt working on Indigenous and Native American issues. Actually, probably the most profound leader that I have met throughout the time that I've been working in California. You have arrived at the right place. I guess I should introduce myself, Mary Lomax. Gariduzzi, my pronouns are she, her, hers, and you have landed on this episode of Humanizing Us, which is an identity-conscious discussion with influencers and people who I like to call humanitarians in action, but is really thinking about diversity, equity, and inclusion in leadership and society, and how does that kind of work on a day-in and day-out basis. And so we have Destiny Rivas here with us, and I just wanted to spend a little bit of time just giving a little bit of background on who Destiny is. She's a Native American Center coordinator. She sits on the Stockton Community Powwow Committee. The city of Stockton has had a powwow, which I believe was his 49th year?
Yeah, 42.
42. Okay, I want to make a little bit more. But it's been hosted most of those times on the campus of the University of the Pacific, where we're sitting right now on the Stockton campus of University of the Pacific. We're inside the beautiful William Holt Library and Learning Resource Center doing this podcast. But her and I spent time this past year, as well as in last year, me just being a facilitator with the university as she works with a group of community leaders on this powwow committee. But she's also on the San Joaquin Urban Native Council. We're going to talk more about that. We're going to talk more about the powwow. We're going to talk about the council. We're going to talk about your work with Stockton Unified as well. And you also participate in a women's drumming group and the Native American Scholarship Foundation. As a matter of fact, we just spent some time talking about one of her current and which she has many students she has supported and continues to support that move into various roles after high school. And one of them is in her first year at McGeorge School of Law here at the University of the Pacific. We're so excited to meet more of the advocates and future leaders that she has been pouring herself into. But she also works to raise awareness for missing and murdered Indigenous women and people. And if you know anything about what has been happening in the United States, particularly over the last 20 to 25 years, we've been able to document more about the horrendous numbers of Indigenous women, Native American women in the United States, all across various regions of the United States that have either gone missing and never been accounted for, or they have been accounted for and they actually have been murdered. This is actually is more than a phenomenon. It is a crisis. Yeah. Unfortunately, not enough people know about that. So we're going to talk about that. And Destiny is from the Cahuilla.
Cahuilla
tribe, the original people of Southern California. So, Destiny, it is so wonderful to have you in studio here on this beautiful fall day on the campus of University of the Pacific here in Stockton, California. Thank you for saying yes.
Of course. You know I love you, OP. This partnership has been amazing for us, and we've loved being here and whatever we can do to support, as you've been supporting our students as well.
Mm. So talk to me a little bit about, this podcast, as I said before, is an idea I had in my head and working with the students that support this, how do we go about humanizing us, that's what this work of equity work is, really. How do we become more of who we are called to be as human beings, and how do we kind of create spaces of humanity for others? And I came up with that idea of, why don't we have conversations with everyday people who are the humanitarians in the community that we live in? When you think about that term, humanizing us, what does that mean to you when you think about the work you've been doing with the Native community?
I think that, a lot of people don't understand is that we are still here. Mm. I'm not wearing this necklace. I turned the corner and everybody kind of knew who I was as soon as they saw the jewelry. They're like, oh, are you Destiny? They kind of had a feeling because mm-hmm. I'm wearing Native regalia, Native mm-hmm. jewelry. And they're like, okay, this is probably a Native. But if you're not wearing that, somebody can mistake me for Asian or Filipino mm-hmm. or Mexican or, mm-hmm. you know, all these other different nationalities and I can blend in. But I wouldn't feel the same connections to a lot of that. I have Mexican American, but the way I eat, the way I speak, the way I pray is completely different from their way of life. So I felt like very isolated and alone as like a youth. And I felt like there was nobody else like me. And so that's what I think humanizing us is making community. Mm. This area right here is so diverse and people don't understand that. Most people don't know that. Mm-hmm. When I was talking to city council, because I got the award for Native American Heritage Month and Indigenous Peoples Day, I was talking to the mayor and he's like, oh yeah, I know we have quite a few, not a lot, you know, 0.5%. And I said, but think about that, 0.5% is bigger than it is in almost anywhere else besides Minnesota, Michigan, and LA. And the difference with us is that we're completely urban. Mm-hmm. So there's not a rancheria or reservation around. So we are all from different tribes. So there's over 576 different tribes.
Oh, wow.
And that's, again, different languages, uh-huh. different food, different everything. And we have to bring them together. You have to build community. And that's how you humanize us. You make community spaces so that they can be who they are mm-hmm. and feel safe in who they are.
Mm, that is so beautiful. So, Destiny, you said that we have to build community. And you're in an area, a geographic area of San Joaquin County, which is a large geographic, county in central California. But specifically, working and living in Stockton, California. And this idea that there is a diverse Indian community that may even be dispersed at the same time and also urban. Yes. You know, so talk about the kind of the urban experience of Native Americans even today, like in Stockton and throughout the San Joaquin County.
Well, it is. It's uh-huh. very difficult because uh-huh. you got to understand that there was something called the Indian Relocation Act. Mm-hmm. And so when that happened, all the tribes, and they're from all over the nation, I mean, Texas, New Jersey, all of them, and they put them in spaces like the Bay Area, in that Oakland area, and they said, hey, go live there. Everything's going to be good. We're going to give you job skills. There's going to be a job set up, and you're going to just be urban, and you're going to be fine. We all know what happened with the housing crisis and the Bay Area prices. So all those tribes from all over, they moved, and a lot of them landed into Stockton.
Yeah.
And so we're all over. Stockton's a big city.
It's a big city. People don't know how big Stockton is. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have them like way out there in East Side, and there's not streets over there. Mm-hmm. There's not the sidewalks that we're used to. And then you have them, you know, in that nice rich area in the North Side. And so you have them all over. They're all different tribes. Mm-hmm. They don't know each other. Uh-huh. And you just have to build it. Uh-huh. And that's the struggle that we face every day is trying to make sure, like, we have a dance and drum class, which we do. We have that mm-hmm. tonight, Mondays at Edison High School. We host that. Mm-hmm. And we let the kids come and learn about the drum. And that's something that's pan-Indian? Mm-hmm. Do you pan-Native? Have you heard that term?
Yeah, well, I'm familiar with pan-African, pan-Asian. So talk a little bit about pan-Native.
So pan-Native is where you are, okay, so the drum comes from different area, the housing styles, the teepees, mm-hmm. they're all from different areas, the dream catchers.
Yes.
But we're all teaching each other our different crafts, our different styles. We're teaching each other how to do Navajo rugs. Mm. Even though somebody isn't Navajo, it's all-encompassing, what we have in connection. The Cherokee have a sign language, mm-hmm. and we have like this really amazing deaf family, the Phillips, and they go out of their way, and mm-hmm. they're dancers, mm-hmm. they're drummers, because
yes.
they feel it. You feel the drum when you're right there,
yes.
and they're feeling the music through the ground, and we're teaching each other everything we possibly can, because, you know, our socioeconomic level is not, you know, in the same league. We're just not, for the majority of us. There are some that are very well off, but for the majority of us, we can't go fly back to our tribal reservation and learn about their culture. So it's up to people like mm-hmm. me to bring as much as I can forward and be like, does this help? Does this help? Let me bring something else. What do you need? Let me call your tribe mm-hmm. and see what we can bring back here. And that's been the great part, is connecting with all the tribes mm-hmm. and being like, how can you support your students that are over here that are feeling left out, lost, and alone mm-hmm. without that connection?
Wow. So talk to me. There's a lot of what I call cultural affirmation, but in some cases it sounds like it's a reformation, like you're bringing back what already is and bringing it together. Can you talk about a little bit about the work that you do specifically with Native students at the high school and at the middle school level? What are you seeing among Native adolescents and teenagers now? What is it that you see that they need?
It's, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
It's mental health. Mm. Mental health is a struggle, and the huge part of it is that disconnection. Mm-hmm. When you don't have that space every day to go to know that there's somebody else out there like you. The most times that I meet a student, it's the most often way is when there's a boy with the braid and somebody tried to cut their hair. When
that's happening right now in schools.
That's happened.
Like so basically, because that's an assault.
Yeah.
That literally teenagers and youth and children, because, you know, a lot of teenagers are just oftentimes just children that are still growing up, that they are being faced by non-natives that are attempting to cut their hair.
Yeah, it's a bullying thing.
It's a bullying.
And yeah. They feel so alone. Mm. And it's a struggle to try to make sure that they know that they have a community mm-hmm. because there's 55 schools at Stockton Unified. Mm-hmm. So they're spread out.
Yeah.
And when the ones that they know, they might not be in the same uh-huh. into the same thing. So it's like, what can I do at this area that's going to help this community? What can I do over here that's going to bring them together? But they need a lot of mental health. And for us, mental health would be learning about the drum, learning about dancing. The drum is... it's so healing because it's your heartbeat.
The drum is a mimicking of the heartbeat.
Yes. So it's never that John Wayne sound. It's nothing like that.
Yeah.
That is just complete fabrication.
Yeah.
It is this soothing heartbeat. Mm-hmm. And you dance to that drum. You feel that drum. Mm. And it's such a healing space. And then when you go and you dance, when you're dancing,
yes,
dance is a prayer for us. Mm. The jingle dancers, when COVID hit, I mean, you saw jingle dancers all over the world going out in the middle of the snow, mm-hmm. wherever they were, and put on their outfit and dance and pray for the world.
Yeah.
And learning those things and learning these crafts and learning about our art and learning that there's natives everywhere and that we are everywhere. We're now in acting. You see mm-hmm. us mm-hmm. popping up with mm-hmm. reservation dogs, and we're so mm-hmm. excited and making sure that they know that we're authors. We, in Stockton Unified, on our campus, we have one of the largest Native American libraries in the San Joaquin County.
Where is this physically housed?
It's at Edison High School.
At Edison High School.
At our Native American Indian Center.
Wow.
I have the largest one, and it is written by Natives, for Natives, about us.
Yes. Oh, wow.
And so it's a completely different way to tell your story.
Yes.
And to feel okay.
Yes.
I make booklets out and I give them to our kids and to our teachers, and I give them curriculum. Like the last one I did was How I Became a Ghost. Mm. And it's a story about a little boy, and it's his story about how he became a ghost along the Trail of Tears.
Oh.
And it's telling it from his first point. It's hard.
So moving.
And it's but uh-huh. it's a story that someone can connect with. Like, that's my ancestor. I survived that.
Yes. So there's so much there, Desi. There's so many things I want to ask you. But I want to continue with this very first concept that I think is a counter-narrative, which is that we're still here.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit. I want to delve a little bit more about that. Tell us about, you work in multiple roles, but the Edison High School is a part of Stockton Unified.
Yes.
It's one of the oldest and largest high schools, among many other high schools, but it's a significant high school. It's along Martin Luther King Jr. Way in South Stockton, and that's where your office and this particular library that you mentioned, Native Indigenous Library. talk to me about the numbers of students you serve, not only at Stockton, not only at Edison High School, but in general in that particular high school age range. I want our hearers and listeners today to kind of get a sense. I want to put some specifics on We're Still Here. So talk about how many your students are and just a little bit about what you're doing there.
So I have over 1,200 students.
Did you say 1,200? It's 1,200
students? 1,200
students.
In Stockton Unified.
In Stockton Unified?
That are Native American.
Okay. Let's just hold that for a second.
Okay.
So we're still here.
We are.
And you're saying that right now, Stockton Unified start with some pre-K. There's some pre-K programs, mm-hmm. and it goes up to 12th grade, and then actually has some post-secondary for adult learners as part of Stockton Unified, but most of the adult learners end up going to Delta College or maybe to University of Pacific or somewhere else. But you're saying in Stockton Unified, you have 1,200 students.
Mm-hmm. 1,200 students, and there are over 300 tribes.
There's 300 tribes?
300 tribes.
In Stockton Unified?
In Stockton Unified.
We're still here.
We are still here. We are thriving. We are in mass. And people will say, well, that's 1% of Stockton Unified. And I'm like, but you don't understand. We made it. We survived. We're the survivors. We know our background. We know what tribe we're from. And we're learning more every day.
Mm. That's where the power comes in, the knowledge.
Yes.
You know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Talk to us. Okay, you said that I asked about the adolescents, and you're saying a lot of mental health issues. What are the other issues that you're seeing? Because you can't serve a youth or a child without serving their family.
Oh, yeah.
What are you seeing in the family, the Indigenous families?
I think there's a lot of food instability.
Mm-hmm.
We try to combat that by... People sometimes think, oh, it's Stockton's not the best city. I would argue. It could be, and it can be in spaces if you're looking in the right spaces. I had a family come in, and they had just came in from the reservation,
mm-hmm.
and they called me and they said, I need food. And mm-hmm. I went on my phone, and I found over 20 distributions of food.
Just like that?
Just like that. All you had to do was drive up and pick up some food. There was bags, there was, you know, mm-hmm. meat, there was vegetables from the edible schoolyard. I mean, mm. we have a thriving community of people who want to help each other. Mm. Sometimes we even argue amongst ourselves, oh, you picked my date to give away Christmas toys. Or, oh, you picked my date to give away Thanksgiving. We uh-huh. have love here. And mm. I think that a lot of people miss that. But a lot of our community is in need of food and they mm-hmm. just need to find the right resources. Mm-hmm. That's why I think resource centers, community centers, mm-hmm. Native centers, equity centers
yes.
are so important because they are the connections to the rest of the community. There is so much out there, but if you don't have the time to look it up or know where to look,
mm-hmm.
you're lost.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of my people need food. There's housing shortages, the rent increases, and it's a lot of the same issues that a lot of Stockton people are
yes.
facing is that, you know, everything's going up.
All the costs across the board have gone up.
Yeah.
Food and everything.
Oh, my God. Food is there was a reason why I'm getting all these calls. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, do you know any place? And I'm like, I know the best place to get vegetables. Hey, I know this guy who's always there Tuesday at Conway, blessing mm-hmm. families, and he's doing this. There's so much need out there. And if you just meet the right people to connect you,
mm-hmm.
you're in a better space.
So as this kind of recapturing in some ways of cultural heritage and knowledge, my guess is that the Native community not only is strong, but it's actually becoming more powerful as you come together in building this community. Where do you think some of the greatest opportunities lie for the Native community that these pieces of the educational piece, of people knowing who they are, finding community, learning language, learning cultural arts, heritage. What are some things you see on the horizon that is going to begin to emerge more of? We know that you're sending the students to college. They're going to colleges and universities.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I think the graduation, so... a couple years ago, I took over from one of the greatest bosses humans that you can have. The founder of the Native Center, Dale Fleming. Mm-hmm. So he founded it over 44 years ago. Mm-hmm. And when I got there, I got to work under him, and he got to mentor me, him and Caroline Wilson. And they taught me that building community is going to save our children's lives. It's going to give them spaces to be. But I think one of the biggest things that I got to do in my leadership role has been starting a graduation ceremony. Mm-hmm. So for us, this is huge. So everyone has a graduation.
Everyone does.
And we used to go to the award ceremony and pass out our graduation feathers. But I would see my kids slink lower and lower when they were hearing all the accolades of everybody else, because everybody there at the award ceremony was getting, oh, the 3.9, they're getting the Gates, they're getting this. And they're just like, well, I'm getting a feather. And I'm like, no, you're getting a feather. You're getting a feather.
Yeah.
You're. This is something huge.
And they didn't understand the symbolism.
And it was because I was in their space. Mm-hmm. I was in this colonized space where that was all that mattered. And we had fought so hard to, like, because we did. We went down to Sacramento and went to the school board, and we got it changed that they could wear this feather on their cap. Mm-hmm. And having this graduation ceremony, we get to hand them this beaded feather. We get to tell them about the elder who did it. We get to invite their whole family and the little kids who get to see this, their elders being, you know, blessed and honored in this way. We get to sing them an honor song. We have, and the greatest thing about it has been, like, the people who came forward to come and help. Because I put out the word out, and I was like, I need speakers.
Yeah.
I had astrophysicists. I've had rocket scientists, Native American, just amazing people, football players, NFL players.
So I'll be there at Stockton for that graduation.
And they have been.
Wow.
And they have been our guest speakers, our keynote speakers, and they're talking to these kids. And then afterwards, they don't get up and leave. They sit down, because afterwards, you know how it is.
Yeah, how
when
it
you
is.
When you have community, you have to have food.
You have to have food, and they sit around for many hours afterwards.
They sit around for many hours afterwards, helping them connect different things that are out there and letting them know, oh, you're into this? I know somebody who's into that. Let me help you get there. And that's how you build. You build this community. Mm-hmm. I know people who went to work at Lawrence Livermore Labs because of this graduation center. I know people who are going to that law school because of
that. That law school because of it.
Yeah, because we don't just invite the families. We invite EOP. We invite you know, everybody to come out, because it's for us to celebrate them. And the more people that are there, the better and more confident they feel, those kids.
So you said something. You said a lot of things, but I want to pick up this thing.
I talk a lot.
Yeah. No, there's just a lot of good things. Two things are going on in my head right now. But I want to talk about how you made mention that you had to go to Sacramento to kind of get probably some clearances or whatever you needed to do to ensure that your students were able to wear the proper traditional and cultural artifact that they need to both support their personhood and their humanity. That's essentially. But you also use the word, you know, the impact of being in colonized spaces.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people talking about decolonization happening in the Academy of Higher Education. You see it in literature. You see it happening in research. But oftentimes, you know, when we talk about these ideas of decolonizing ourselves, no one really understands what decolonization outside of an indigenous perspective. That would be my take on it from as someone understanding history. Talk to me about this idea of helping the indigenous community, the urban Native American community that has come from 300 plus tribes in the urban area, such as Stockton, California, and the surrounding cities, because your community is much bigger than Stockton. It's San Joaquin County. It makes up nine cities, makes up San Joaquin County, including Tracy and Ripon and a whole bunch of other cities. What does it mean to decolonize from you as a Native American woman and you as a leader trying to help other Native Americans engage in a decolonizing existence?
I think the biggest thing that someone can do to decolonize is let us speak for ourselves. That is such a thing that it continually happens. You need this to move forward, and you need that to move forward. And look, we made this space, and we included you because we put a white teepee from Target in there, and we put some, you know, Target dream catchers up there. And I said, no, that's not us. And I mean, it wasn't just our culture that was, I don't even know what words you use to describe that.
Dehumanized.
kind of. Uh-huh. We were a caricature. And they're like, this is a reflection room, and this is what we... And I'm like, this is gross to me. And I think the Hindu religion that was right there and the other religion, you guys were trying to do something, but you missed the mark when you didn't come and talk to the Native people first. Because I could have told you, okay, you want dream catchers? I'll have the kids build them. Mm-hmm. We'll come in there and do a class in that reflection center and teach these kids about doing it and what it is and what it means and the stories behind it. Because there's multiple stories about it. And that's the biggest thing. I think there's a lot of times where people jump forward and say, oh, I know about their plight. Let me go and do it. And we live in something a woke culture. Mm-hmm. And I see sometimes people weaponize wokeness. Mm. I've been in spaces and settings where there's been a privileged white man who then he learned about our stuff and he wants to be an ally, but in his allyship, he was taking over and yelling about something, yelling about the National Park Service and what they did to us. And I said, yeah, you're right. That did happen. And we should acknowledge that. However, we are working with the National Park Service now. We're talking about TEK, traditional ecological knowledge. Mm-hmm. We're talking about bringing back burns. We're teaching about things that are important to us.
Yeah.
And they're working with us, and they're hiring within our communities. Mm-hmm. And we don't have an antagonism. You are making it in your allyship. And it happens in all kinds of spaces, in political, nonprofit, school spaces. They're like, oh, you don't need this. We're going to tell you. They did a Native American heritage certificate. Oh, this is what we're doing. We're doing a resolution. When did you invite the Native Parent Committee? Did you invite them to come and accept it? You just said it out loud to nobody.
Said it out loud to nobody. And so then
these
public acknowledgments, then who are they for then? Who are they really intended for?
Yeah, it's to be, you know, oh, look how amazing I am and how equitable. And it's like, if you put Native people forward, that's how you're equitable. Mm-hmm. If you're wanting to talk about different voices, you bring that voice to the table and you make sure that it's equitable. You can be as knowledgeable as you want, but you need to know to step aside and let somebody else speak.
Yeah.
You're not going to speak for them.
Yeah.
That's how you're equitable.
That's how you are equitable, and that's how you decolonize spaces.
Absolutely.
That's at least a beginning.
Yeah. That's how you start.
That's how you start.
And I start there because so many of us are not there. There's so many people who are jumping in like, oh, I know this. I'm going to do this. And it's like, no, sweetie. Mm-hmm. This is what we care about.
Yeah.
You're fighting this fight. Well, we're fighting this fight.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I find that really interesting because, you know, I've been an educator in the state of California. That's just where I've been located for 30 years now, all in higher education. And, you know, we were doing diversity, equity, inclusion work when it wasn't called this. Working with migrant communities and trying to get children to go to just to get be able to sign up for even a community college class, to do work with organizing. This is the San Diego area, organizing Native American, African American, and Latinx students. You know, just to be able to get some access to educational resources, but it wasn't even called that back those years. But there is an interesting phenomena that you're getting at, that this particular time frame that we're in right now, and that work, you know, and diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice and belonging work, whatever the label that you put on it, has been work that has been happening. And then you and I inherited this work from other people.
Right.
You know, so there is an interesting phenomena that has happened more recently where consciousness has increased, but compassion and empathy and humility has not. So consciousness without, you know, kind of cultural humility and some vulnerabilities that doesn't center one's own self and one's own knowledge and sense of self, even if you got a lot of great knowledge, that as it actually hasn't increased as much as the some of the consciousness. So it's been interesting for me doing this work for a long time, and I'm sure for you too, to kind of, because it wasn't like that like 5 years ago. No. it wasn't like that at all. You just didn't have people that kind of like became experts overnight.
Yeah,
a lot of people became experts overnight or want to be experts overnight, and they want to tell you how to do work that you've been doing for decades.
Yeah. I've had a lot of people come in, oh, this is the crisis that you guys are having, and this is what, and I'm like, that is something that's happening on the outskirts, but what's really happening is right here.
Yeah.
And if we just had our own spaces and our own places, saying yes is one of the hugest things you can do, is like listening to somebody. Like, a lot of us minorities don't have the spaces to hold our own meetings, to hold our own, you know, hold our own community gatherings and times. Like, you've seen me running around begging people, hey, what can I do? Okay, can I get this space over here? I got a meeting over here. Let's do this. It's hard. And when we have all these experts that are then taking up space, that they don't allow us the space. And they're like, this is what's the most important thing. And it's like, hey, what you can be talking about is we can be moving forward by giving them a space to do what they want to do. And this community will tell you, they're not quiet.
No, they're not.
We're not quiet. No. You see them and they're like, this is what we need.
Listen to them. Yeah. One of the things I've learned is that the most important thing that I could do is show up and be quiet. No, I'm serious. Show up and just be. And then if there's something that you, to be added, someone will invite you, or they may even ask you, but just to show up and just be.
To ask, yeah. I mean, I think anyone can just come in and ask and be like, hey, what can I do? And they will tell you.
And they will tell you.
I've been to so many meetings recently where it's like, oh, this is what, and I'm like, please let this community tell you.
This community tell you what they need.
And they need so much more than what we're giving right now. And there's so many cultural knowledge bearers that want to come in, but the space isn't available because somebody else is sitting there and saying, this is what's really needed. And I hate to, like, I feel like we're talking on that so much, but it is such a reality for us.
So before we get to towards the end, I just feel like I need to just deal with this, you know. So there's a question that came up recently at a kind of a university. It's a little bit like a town hall, but the president creates a space for anyone, faculty, staff, and students propose questions. And one of the questions from the audience came up, you know, why doesn't the University of the Pacific have a formally adopted land acknowledgement? Because on my website, and I also, anytime anyone contacts me, I said, if you want to have to do a ceremony that is specifically for Native students, we had a former Indigenous colleague of ours who wrote something during the time that she was here. She worked with the community, and that, you know, that's what you can use. But I often will say, you know, that this should be used for Native purposes. And that's generally what it's used for, i.e. the University of the Pacific Native student graduation ceremony. But I think people want more. And they've kind of pushed me. And I've said, well, I was like, I have relationships with some of the Native. I don't have all the relationships, I said, but I think I have strong enough relationships. So it's not a lack of relationships. But I said, the request doesn't come from the community. So I said, I kind of get my cues from the community. So tell me a little bit more from your perspective so that I'm not putting any words in anybody's mouth because they think that I am.
Okay. So the land acknowledgement on UOP has came to my attention multiple times for many years. And I take my cues from the Native students that are on UOP campus. And from when I've met with them and when I've talked with them, and when our, because there is a tribe that is local that is in Stockton that has came in with me to do these talks, and we're talking with the students on what they want and what they think about, a land acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. The students, be very honest, this is going to be very blunt, I'm very sorry. Mm-hmm. The students, the Native students of UOP have not wanted a land acknowledgement here on UOP campus because, as we've talked about, mm-hmm. things can become performative. Mm-hmm. And they felt that UOP is a private school. Mm-hmm. It's a prestigious school. And it has money. And there is not one Native American scholarship that's available to Native American students exclusively. They said if there was just one, they would say you're giving something back to the community. So doing a land acknowledgement is acknowledging that you're on somebody's stolen land. That this is not, you know, this is what happened. You're mm-hmm. acknowledging what happened in history. So if you just do that and you do nothing forward going forward, then it's just an empty gesture. It's just something to show that you are, you're acknowledging this, but oh well, let's keep moving forward. And that's how they felt it would be. They felt if there was any one way, and they feel like they're holding it kind of hostage in hopes that someone will hear them and someone will see that there needs to be at least one Native American scholarship. It could be broad, it could be open, because you're telling there's an urban area here. We're telling you how many different tribes. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be for a tribe that's local to Stockton, mm-hmm. just one. And they would say, let's do a land acknowledgement. We endorse this, and we stand behind it, because mm-hmm. UOP is giving back to Native American community. That's what they want.
I appreciate you for stating that for us and making it very clear. And I know exactly, because two students have told me the same.
Yeah, when I do it, I've done it for like a land acknowledgement for Aspire, and I tell them, mm-hmm. I tell them, this is an empty gesture if you don't give back. Mm-hmm. And but they're different, it's a different community. I tell them what you can do as teacher, because I'm usually doing it in front of like a teacher's community. Uh-huh. I'm telling them, you as teachers, you can acknowledge that there's probably an angry Native young girl in there, and she's probably been sexually harassed. She's probably knows someone that's missing murdered Indigenous mm-hmm. women. She's probably been abused in some way. There's someone angry in their family. I can tell you that that boy in that class who has that long hair has been picked on. He's been picked on. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you. And I can tell you that when you're meeting with those families and they're angry, you got to understand they don't trust the system. They're coming from residential school survivors. Mm-hmm. Their families have, you know, don't trust the government. They don't trust the schools. And so that's why they're angry. So if you can teach them with grace and humility and understanding that this is the background they're coming from, mm-hmm. that this is why they're acting this way, this is, and then you can connect with them. That's how you give back to the community as a teacher. Now, here at UOP, I got to support the kids. If they want one, it's not for them. It's not for them individually. They're not fighting for themselves. They're fighting for the community that they grew up in Stockton Unified, because I think two of your major Native students are my past students.
They are your students.
And
they're great leaders on campus. They're wonderful.
That's my mission and vision is for them to be leaders. Mm-hmm. And they are fighting for one other student to come in on a Native American exclusive scholarship. And that's what they want.
So let's talk a little bit about that work that the students did and continue to do, and the relationship you do have with the community, the Stockton Native community, and the university, with this beautiful event that happens annually. That's called, I think it's actually called the Stockton Powwow.
Yes.
That's the actual name of it.
Yeah.
People come from all over. They drive from all over.
Yes.
It is, I'm just going to have to tell people, you're going to have to find some videos, you're going to have to find some photos. Stockton Record did a beautiful spread this past year, but it is one of the most beautiful community events. You know, I got a chance, I wish I had been recording, but I can tell you, walking around and just seeing a few people, but these are people from the community, they just happen to be from the Stockton community, and I met this African-American family, and it was multi-generation. It was the grandmother, the mother, and some of her children. So it's at least three generations. And they said, we said hello to each other. And then they said, you know, we come here. Well, then we made some comments about our own shared heritage as African American. What brought them to Stockton? I said, my family came in 1954. When yours? All that thing. And then we were talking about our shared love of the Native American community. And she says, you know, I've been coming to this thing for 20 some odd years. I've been bringing, and I'm bringing the next generation. She says, because I want them to see not only the beauty and understand about the Native American community, but I want them to see ourselves through it, how important it is for a community to come together, for an African-American woman to see how important the powwow was, to teach her children the importance of coming together in community. She says, this is besides everything else, the beauty and the food and all that. She says, it's a community piece. An elderly African-American resident had said, I come because I love the community gathering, and I want my children to see that model. You know, talk about what the powwow means.
The powwow came right after the Native American Indian Center. It was like one of our first things that we started planning. It was called Indian Days. It was called this. It was called that. We became powwow. Mm-hmm. And powwow, you know, people use that term often, like, oh, let's go powwow over here and have this meeting.
They do. And you're right. Oh, my gosh. You get the use of that term. Yeah.
But, I mean, in the heart of it, in the spirit of it, is the coming together.
It's the coming together.
And that's, I'm so grateful that I'm the chair and that they've entrusted this to me. Believe me, if there's some youth that wants to come and take it from me, I will hand it over. But
the chair of this beautiful community event.
Oh, we have thousands of people.
Thousands of people who come.
They come, and it's beautiful. You don't see anger there.
No. No. As a matter of fact, there's just the things that things happen at the powwow, and you just know they're going to happen, and they're not planned for, such as a wedding.
A wedding?
I was like, what's happening? She says, oh, no, there's going to be a wedding. I said, there's a wedding? She said, and the whole thing, and it was so beautiful. And she said, and you told me that day, she says, expect the unexpected at powwow. The beautiful things like this always happen.
Yeah. So you have weddings. You have new births that come in, and people bring their babies and welcome into the center. It's part of, you know, the program. Mm-hmm. They go up to the MC, and they talk to them, and they say, I just had a newborn, and I want to welcome him to the circle. Mm. And so they come out with their family, and then the whole Native community, you'll see dancers running to come and dance behind them and welcome this baby into this circle. Like you saw at the wedding where people came running, like, let me congratulate you, wish you well, and dance behind you.
Yes.
We it's our time to show physically that we are with you, that you are not alone.
You are not alone.
And it's so healing. That powwow ground is sacred. We bless it. And when we're there, it's so much love.
There's so much love. I felt the love.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. Besides the beauty, I think it was the love that you could feel.
And you're talking about all these people that come from all over.
That's the reason I'm giving you one story. I'm telling you that this one, and I was moved
and
by what she said.
I probably know him.
You probably know him.
I'm thinking of who it probably is. Because the thing is, we do know these families for generations. Mm-hmm. And that was the great part of handing it down to me. You're still going to see Dale Fleming at that thing.
Yeah.
And he'll introduce me to a couple people that I don't know, but we know each other.
Yeah.
And we only see each other that one time a year. Mm-hmm. But it's like, hey, you're here. Mm-hmm. Come in. Let's go, you know, do our circle. Let's do a round dance. Let's talk to each other. Let's sit in these little tents that we have everywhere. And we're going to watch the other dancers and just be together. Mm-hmm. And you have these thousands of people, and we know each other. Mm-hmm. And we know the kids running around. I don't think you've ever seen kids running around your campus like that. And they don't go past a certain vendor. The vendor will tell them, hey, go back.
Your grandma. They know what their parameter is.
Yeah, your grandma's over here. I'm going to talk to Grandma Susie, your grandma. Mm-hmm. You know? And that's, we all know each other. Mm-hmm. And it's unreal.
It really is.
It really is unreal. Like, you see me. I'm inviting everybody to come.
Yes.
Because you get to come and you get to be part of it.
Yes.
You get to celebrate with us. And you get to see the beauty. Oh, the regalia.
The regalia is something special.
And everyone's is different.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And there's two drum sets. You have a north and a south drum.
You have a northern and a southern drum. Mm-hmm. And we have our head staff. We have our princess. Mm-hmm. It's been amazing work. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's love and it's community. And you see, like, there's some Pomo dancers, and you can see their family dressing in the same mm-hmm. style because their family handmade those outfits.
Yes.
Handmade them yeah. for hours, stitched yeah. on every single one, and made those roaches and all the different part of it. It's all handmade. And when you don't know how to do something, you go to community.
Yeah.
You go to those spaces that we're talking about. You build it together right then and there. And we get to have this love fest. It really is. It's just so healing in there. And we get to be together. And you've seen us in our meetings. We're tired.
Yes. But yeah, so this is what happens. Weeks and before the powwow, there's an annual meeting. I mean, a weekly meeting. And about five, I finish up at the office. I got to go over because I'm just going to go over and sit with the indigenous leaders and community and just see, is there anything you need from the university? I just sit there. If there's something that you need, you let me know. But it's really wonderful.
Yeah.
And people, yeah.
Yeah, people don't realize how much goes into it.
It's a lot of work.
It is, because you got to make sure you have the vendors, and you got to mm-hmm. make sure that they're native vendors, and you got to make sure that
the lighting and everything. Yes. It's not just things. Where do they come from?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is all done by community. Everyone's a volunteer. No one gets paid. And money is not made, I will tell you that. Mm-hmm. But it is the best part of my year because I get to see these kids that we do this dance class with come in and come into the circle and join and welcome and be part of and be embraced. Mm-hmm. It's like a coming of age, something. And I'll go down the tent and I'll know these kids. These are kids that I've, taught, that I've been part of their lives. And now they're published Black Native authors, mm-hmm. Poets, and firefighters, and they're all coming together to come here today and dance and teach the little kids. Oh, there's, you can see them. Oh, this is a dance. This is a dance style for this. If you don't know this yet,
yeah.
Oh, let me tell you this, and then you get to hear the MC and he's telling you the stories because mm-hmm. he's the one who's telling you everything that you need to know about that powwow.
Yeah.
He's telling you what this song is. He's telling you what's happening. He's telling you the story behind it.
Yeah, the whole thing is not, I won't use the word curated, but if you had come and you didn't know much or you knew just a little bit, and if you just need to listen, you can sit and understand what the symbolic nature is. You'll learn the stories. I was so taken by how much storytelling was happening, but kind of like a 101 too for the person that may have come in, and by doing that, that's an entry. It's like that's a welcoming gesture. We're going to kind of tell you this from a very basic level so you understand what's happening here. Mm-hmm. I think that's from as an educator, I understand how important. That's one way you make people feel welcome. You don't make them feel like an outsider, or you're like ignorant. Let me tell you what's happening right now. And this person, this is why we do this. That was the entire thing, explaining what was happening. So people get all kind of lessons around Native culture just by observing but listening.
Talking about that reminded me. Do you know that's how we met, is that you heard my speech. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm talking to the community about, the graduation ceremony and graduating mm-hmm. 100 Native students a year.
Yes.
And you came up and you was like, let me introduce myself.
I said, this woman is powerful. And because I learned so much because I was listening. Yeah. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I have to know her.
Because we do. We'll pause. Yeah. And we're going to be like, hey, let's do an explanation about what's going on here.
Yes.
What's coming up, or what's coming up in the future. So that way, if you love this, mm-hmm. let's go to the next scene, or let's do something else. It's never, that's the thing, it's never closed. Mm-hmm. And when we had, like, even when we used to have, way before COVID, 3-day powwows. Mm-hmm. And on a 3-day powwow, we'd have something called a community meal, mm-hmm. where we, our Native community, our powwow community, those six of us, will go out there and we would cook a feast and feed every single person, not only the dancers, people who just came.
Anybody
in,
that came.
And we were passing out plates of food so that way you were welcomed into our community. Mm-hmm. And this is what it's about. It's making sure that every door is open.
Yes.
That you are welcome in every way, space, and form. Mm. Because you don't have to be native to go to those things. And a lot of times people are afraid and nervous and thinking, oh, that's not for me. That's no, this is for you. This is for you to learn. This is for you to be here and be part of us.
Mm-hmm. I want to, it would be remiss for us to not have a conversation in this time together to talk about the epidemic that has happened nationally around the missing and murdered Indigenous women and people. Can you just kind of give us a, if people are unfamiliar, can you talk a little bit about what that is about? And why does it need advocacy? And why are you involved in raising awareness around this issue?
I think I'm involved. Mm-hmm. For a long time, there's been three kind of basic Native communities, leaders, spaces in this area. But the Native Center has been the most prominent, the most able to work with everybody because we didn't have a lot of the same restrictions that a lot of people had. And my job was to make community. So people come to me who are former students, generations back, community members. They come forward and they ask me for help often. And I'm going to tell you a story if you're okay with
this.
Why I'm here, a storyteller, native is what
native.
It is.
Yeah.
there was a night and I was doing my life, living my life, and I got a phone call and it was from this grandparent and her child had already graduated and she's in her 20s and she calls and she tells me that her child is missing. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? Or, you know, she's like, yeah, we got some flyers out, but the news isn't picking it up. No one's pretty putting it out there. So I called a friend of mine who runs 209 Times, and I said, hey, I need you to push this out there for me. I need it everywhere. I need this to be viral. Here's the flyer that was made. And it did. It got out there. And the next day, the girl came home. Now, here's the part where it gets about missing and murdered Indigenous women. She gets home. She goes to the police. She tells them who kidnapped her and what had happened. And they told her this was a domestic violence situation that you had a restraining order on. And you voluntarily got into the truck of this man. And she said, I did because I was alone and he was gonna hurt me, so I had to get in. And they said, you violated the restraining order by getting into his vehicle. So we can't do anything about this, even though he held you hostage. And it wasn't until his mother saw the picture on 209 Times that she went and told the son to let her go. And so the police turned her away. And so this grandma calls me back. And she's like, what can we do? And I go and I talk to the police because I've done presentations for them before. And there's like, there's nothing we can do. They have a restraining order. And I said, you know what? We're going to get her out of here. And we get her out of there. We get her based into Sacramento. And we find housing for her. And, you know, we're thinking, okay, this space, this distance is going to make it okay. And a couple months later, he found her. He killed her. And it was really hard for us as a community. The story isn't unique in that regard. We've had about 6 women be murdered like that in Stockton, in this community where we felt it. And so I went to the district attorney and I yelled and I screamed in a way, I'm usually very diplomatic, but in this place I wasn't. And I met with her and Tori was like, okay, we're gonna start changing policies and we're gonna do this. But I had always thought like, okay, missing and murdered Indigenous women, it's a huge issue on reservations and spaces where there's man camps.
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen in urban areas. It
doesn't happen in urban areas. You think it's happening someplace in some other rural locations, some
but
further.
But it does. And it happened, there's Khadijah Brown, and there's about 6 women in our community that have passed, and one has been my cousin. And it's because we're not doing enough advocacy. Mm-hmm. We're not doing enough work. And we have to do it right here on the reservations And in Congress.
And in Congress.
And so I'm so
grateful. State legislatures,
State legislature. We need to be everywhere talking mm-hmm. about this is what's happening to our women, and it's being ignored. And our women are dying. And they're being abused. And they're being kidnapped. Can you imagine that she knew who kidnapped her? He taped her to a chair. And the mom knows, and she knows. And we had to go, and she still passed. He mm-hmm. still found her. And it was like, she violated the restraining order for getting in the car. Like, so I think it's our job as community leaders to talk about those stories so that way we can learn about them.
Yeah.
So that way we can move forward and make new policies and make houses and haven houses and mm-hmm. and bridge whatever needs to be bridged. Is it education? Do we mm-hmm. need to do more on the Lisa project? What do we do to make it more available? That kids know that there's places that you know you can go to McDonald's and say a safe word and go, you know, mm-hmm. there are things out there, and we have some community resources that can help you. Because so many of our women are afraid, because what do they all usually have in common is that they usually have kids.
They have children. And then the children is the very thing they want to protect. And at the same time, it makes them vulnerable.
It keeps them in certain spaces.
Keeps them in certain spaces.
They have to have phone numbers. They have to have addresses. And so we have mm-hmm. to figure out ways. If there is these issues, then we need to make sure that we're there mm-hmm. and that we're putting our names forward and our pictures forward. Khadijah, she's been gone for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've seen a news report on it. We have banners, and we mm-hmm. have it all over the reservations in the town. And we do it from a community pool that this beautiful, wonderful warrior, bear spirit woman, Marge Groh Eppert, mm-hmm. She comes to our powwow, mm-hmm. And she puts up her rent tent, and she has a little fund that she does, mm-hmm. and she sells some things so that we can make those banners. Mm-hmm. We work with different artists so that way we could screen print, and we do that all in Oakland, and then we go out to Sacramento to protest and sing and just raise awareness, because mm-hmm. it is an epidemic, and people have no idea how many people have been lost.
No, I think that is a lack of knowledge and lack of education.
Yeah.
So the awareness and advocacy piece is really important.
It is.
It's really critical.
Yes.
So I know that we're getting closer to the end. There's so many more things I want to ask you. I just want to make sure there's certain things I had to ask you before we finish. The Women's Drumming Group. Tell us a little bit about the Women's Drumming Group.
Okay. So drumming traditionally mm-hmm. is a male thing. Mm-hmm. It's part of our tradition.
Yes.
And it's you know, this is a drum that the males are supposed to drum on, and it's not traditionally for our females.
Yeah.
So things evolve and things change. Mm-hmm. And as we're all learning, we can't chastise or stop somebody from doing something. So in Northern California, we have a women's drum retreat.
Oh, wow.
And we have drummers from the Bay Area, uh-huh. from the mountains, and we all come together mm-hmm. and we learn songs mm-hmm. because songs are passed down.
They're telling stories.
And they are telling a story. Mm-hmm. You have the Wildflower song. Mm-hmm. You have the MMIW song. Mm-hmm. We have the AIM song. And you have to get permission to mm-hmm. sing them. You have to ask them. So it has to be given to each other.
Wow. And you can't just take it. Like, people just take people's music and songs.
Oh, no.
Co-opt it. You can't co-opt these songs.
Yeah. And then when you're performing the song, it's your duty. As you're supposed to start by telling whose song it is. Mm. Who wrote it and what it's for. Mm. And then you sing.
It's acknowledgement.
Oh, yeah. So, these women, they came together and they built a space for other women to learn the drum. Mm-hmm. So at our dance and drum class, we have a traditional drum. We can have some of Maggie and the mm-hmm. rest of them come down. We could do a women's drum if there's an interest right now. Mm-hmm. Everyone's trying to just mm-hmm. barely learning. But there is a small group of us mm-hmm. that we send up every March. It's about 20 girls from Stockton mm-hmm. who go up to the mountains in this retreat for, you know, 3 days in cabins, and mm-hmm. we're all together, eating together, sharing space, singing and learning and teaching each other the drum. Mm. And we're teaching the honoring practices, how mm-hmm. to care for it, how to oil it, how to sing to it, how to protect it. Mm. It's awake. Mm-hmm. We've had to have a ceremony where one, you know, where you put it to sleep, or mm-hmm. you put it, you know, because it's a living, breathing thing. Mm-hmm. Every part of it is made from natural materials. Mm-hmm. And there's times where it has to be retired. And so then you have to do a burning ceremony. Mm-hmm. And it's a ceremony mm-hmm. because it is part of us. Mm-hmm. And we are giving back, and we are giving to it, and it is giving back to us. Mm-hmm. So it is really cool. I'm going to just say cool to see, you know, these young girls, and they're learning to drum mm-hmm. and some of them have become really good at it. Mm-hmm. And oh, my little Gianna. Mm. Oh, wow. She does so much on it. And if you want to talk MMIW, you need to bring that little girl on, because she tells you statistics. She tells you numbers.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, she was in a documentary about it. Uh-huh. She's just our little youth. She's applying to UOP.
I love it. All the, yes. Yeah, so, keep sending us these brilliant indigenous students.
Yeah, so uh-huh. it's so amazing to see her uh-huh. get into it and see her mm-hmm. feel it. And then she talks to me afterwards about how it reverberates and how it comes into her. It fills her. Mm-hmm. And like, even my nephew, when he was drumming the first time at the drum at mm-hmm. Edison, he started crying when we got in the car. And I said, "Why are you crying, baby?" He said, I feel so much emotion. Mm. That's what it is.
It's a sacred.
It is.
It's a sacred
medicine.
Medicine.
Yeah.
And you're right. The drum beat is a personification, a manifestation of the heartbeat.
Yes.
And there's a reason why so many cultures around the world were attracted to a drum mm-hmm. because it was a sign of life and humanity.
Yeah.
And a call.
Yeah.
You know, Destiny, this has been such a full conversation, and you and I can come back again and do 2.0, part two.
I talk too much. I'm sorry.
No, you don't. No, you don't. No, because there's a lot that's there. But the thing we really wanted to talk about, the Native American Indian Center, which is really kind of the organizational hub, if you will.
It is, because it's not just Stockton Unified.
Yeah.
People always think, oh, you're just talking.
That's the reason I said, you notice I said that first. Yeah. Stockton Unified is where Edison High School is, and that's where the library, and that's where oftentimes if I want to go to your office, I know that's where you are. But the Native American Indian Center is, where is it physically located?
It's physically located at Edison, but
okay.
The center itself works with, it's got a grant called Johnson O'Malley. It's not a lot of money, but it enables us mm-hmm. to work with Native students who don't have a Native center, mm-hmm. which Lincoln, Lodi,
uh-huh.
they don't have this. So uh-huh. we get to go step in and be like, hey, let me show you your culture because you don't have this. And that's why it was created by the Office of Indian Ed, was that mm-hmm. we are allowed to not just work with Stockton Unified. We're
Office of Indian Ed in California or the federal?
Federal.
Okay. And do you do work with the Office of Indian Bureau, the Bureau of Indian Affairs?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. So, yeah, we work a lot with them. They give us our directives, like, hey, language is really important right now. Mm-hmm. Hey, let's learn about STEM. And they also give you resources mm-hmm. and they have conventions that teach you so much that you bring back to your community.
Yeah.
But they allowed us to not only just work with Stockton Unified, it's to work with those charter schools, those other districts schools. Uh-huh. that they don't have a Native center there to fight for them. I can't tell you how many times I went down to Lincoln and be like, here's a law. Mm-hmm. You have to let our kids wear their regalia, do this. Mm-hmm. And it's part of it because they don't have that advocate.
Absolutely.
So I get to be that advocate.
You get to be the advocate. So you're an advocate for this whole region, this whole kind of Central Valley region. And it just happens to be physically located at a facility at Stockton Unified, which is Edison High School.
Yes.
Which, by the way, is the high school that I went to. It's a pretty go Vikings.
Yeah.
So Native American Indian Center, the Stockton Powwow Committee Chair, which is an annual event. The San Joaquin Urban Native Council, which is what it is. It's kind of like a community leadership council. The Women's Drumming Group. You also are chairing up the Native American Scholarship Foundation. That's one other thing. Just talk about that quickly, if you could.
Quickly, so the Native American Indian Center, we have those 100 graduates. And they are not typically like, let me give you a college scholarship. Mm-hmm. They're a scholarship to, you want to go to this drum retreat. Mm-hmm. Hey, you have the opportunity to go to China and you don't have the funds. Mm-hmm. Let us help you here. Oh, you want to be a basketball player? Let me help you with your mm-hmm. fees. because, as I said, our a lot of our students fall under that McKinley-Vento Act, that homeless, you know, mm-hmm. they fall into that lower socioeconomic. So a lot of times these things are a big struggle for our community. So the Native American Scholarship Fund was created by Chris and Scott McBrien. Mm-hmm. And they have another person, Jacqueline Montanez, and they consult with me so that way I can confer the students over to them mm-hmm. and make sure that our kids have all their needs met.
All their needs met.
Yeah.
Wow. 1,200 students you are serving right now.
Yes.
Through the Stockton Unified School District. And that is just a small number when you add the full extent of what their families and the community here. One of the most important things you said in the counter narrative at the beginning is that we are still here.
Oh, yes.
Thank you so much for sharing your love, your advocacy, your knowledge, your awareness, and just the role that you're playing at a time such as this as a person to not only preserve culture, but to build community so that other Indigenous people and people such as myself who can be able to participate in the community are able to learn and grow and hopefully build a sense of solidarity amongst all of us. I'm so grateful to you, Destiny Rivas. You're the bomb.
Thank you.
You're one of the most important leaders in this city and county.
I don't even know what to say to that. Thank you.
One of the most important leaders in this city and county. I want to thank you for everything that you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for calling me up. I'm pissed talking to you.
Absolutely. All right. Until the next time we come back together, because there's a lot more that we can unpack, but this is kind of an introductory one. So thank you for being a part of humanizing us.
Of course.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks. Okay.
Yay. Was it she also?
Yeah.
Wow.
Sorry.
Amazing.
Sorry. I talk a lot.
No, it's good.
I can rap.